I really am sorry to hear that it is taking so long to get to the bottom of this. Seems to me that there's only one document that is being sought, and it shouldn't be that difficult. But this is part and parcel of what average people complain about every day. I mean, when people have this kind of business to transact in Barbados, it is at the core of all this talk about the ease of doing business. If business people think that they have it rough, they should listen to what average people in this country have to say about trying to get simple things sorted out. And I know the government has spoken about digitization and that sort of thing, but sometimes I don't think it is absolutely necessary for us to have digitization to improve the way that we deal with matters of this type. I mean, if you had been to the fire service and couldn't get the report, and you went to the police and you haven't been able to get the report, well, I think your problem with the police is that you need to be guided as to the procedure, because that should not require speaking with the commissioner of police.
Right, because I don't know what the police... He sent me to commissioner. Tell me what the commissioner of police will do.
No, it's not the commissioner. What you need to do is to ask some question in the police force. Perhaps call for the public relations officer or somebody like that and ask them to guide you as to what steps you need to take in these circumstances, rather than calling the office of the commissioner of police.
Excuse me, David. I went in and, you see, when I call back to let them know that I'm not... you know what? They don't listen. They don't listen. The same person will not answer the phone. And when I try to explain, they say, listen, I go to the commissioner, and that's it. They would not listen.
But then you would have to write to the... Hold on a minute. You may not listen, but you also have to look at the strategy that you employ. It is something that ideally you need to write on, though.
Yes, Terrell, I feel right so many times for me.
You wrote to the commissioner on this?
No.
Right. So you need to write to the commissioner's office and indicate that this is the problem, and you want to find out whether they can provide you with a report. It does not require speaking directly to the commissioner, but it calls for writing to the office and let somebody then take it from there. I understand the frustration that you are experiencing, and it should be possible to have somebody from immigration or so guide you through the process. This would be the helpful way of dealing with these matters, but I suppose they will say to you that they don't have the resources because, you know, there are so many people that they may have to guide, but there is a need for that kind of assistance. I sincerely hope that you are able to get some progress in this matter and that you don't have to resort to using a passport that you haven't used in 28 years. Okay? Thank you very much for calling. Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm fine, sir.
Yes, sir.
I tried to get it on Friday when you had the issue about people were saying that the parliament only complained about 6 months or something like that, about the quality of the air and the moves discreetly. But I that's not necessarily correct. Because I can see here on the 6th of February 2013, Mr. John Thurston said, Mr. Arthur on occasion departs before the priest completes prayers. Mr. Carradine stated that Mr. Arthur complained to him that the air quality in the chamber was affecting him. That's one of the reasons he gave for not attending to Parliament. The speaker said that he got the clerk to get 2 brand new air purifiers and place them in the House of Parliament. So this is all back in 2030. So it wasn't just when Dr. Brown made her complaints just a short while ago. Today is 21 months, the new government in the office. Just like to say it like that. Now, I hear you said about well, I keep hearing you saying it already, about the austerity measures.
And the taxation. How would you defend that?
Yeah. I'm defending that, though. I just gave my input. No, the austerity measure here. I dealt with you with this matter when the OIDB brought out the report with the property rate. That was in 30 September 2017. We had an austerity, the IMF were in Barbados. Now, that report basically said that property went up. They had it rated at 28%, right? You remember that? You remember when OIDB brought out their report?
I remember, 2017? Yeah.
Right, and handed to Steve Blackett. I hear he talking a lot of things yesterday as well. He like, he didn't remember this. So, property ain't no, ain't no same property. Even the Prime Minister then at the time, he commented a whole lot, lots of women on the street with children. And when, I can remember telling you and Gay Safri, Mr. Safri, when he said, Mr. Blackett called, and he was very, well, arrogant regarding Mr. Safri. You asked him every year what Mr. Safri said. He said, oh, if you're going forward, it won't be with him, blah, blah, blah. So we had a lot of property in Barbados, property in Barbados for a long, long time, though. You touched on when...
So what's the argument? I don't know that there was any discussion today about whether there was less or more poverty now.
No. What
the focus of my comment was about the complaints about the level of taxation.
But you also talk about this, well, when IMF go to the things, you see this austerity too.
Yeah, generally speaking,
right, so
that's the case. We
discussed this already. We had austerity brothers for the 10-year period the last time.
That's true.
The taxation.
That's true, but you know what you cannot escape?
Mm-hmm.
That since 2018, we have had more austerity. And if you put austerity on top of austerity, people will complain.
Listen, they say you got to understand. I hear you talk about the surplus that the government is...
The 6% surplus. Why is it necessary? What do you think?
It has to be necessary.
Why?
Your macro, the Barbados... The micro economy. In other words, people will not see the difference until and when the macro economy improves.
But why do you need the 6% surplus in circumstances where my recollection is that the former Prime Minister, Arthur, used to talk about running Barbados with a small deficit rather than that kind of surplus that they're talking about? Because it was perceived at the time that it was not, you have to impose too many measures on the country to achieve the target. That is the perspective that some people are presenting. If you look...
They're incorrect.
Why is it incorrect? You tell me.
No, as I said to you, the macro has to improve, right? Now, when Mr. Arthur's poor, Mr. Arthur ran a top-class economy. Mr. Arthur's economy was rated A.
But he wasn't striving for a 6% surplus.
No, he wasn't striving for it because he didn't need to. He, as I said, he could have incurred a small deficit because the economy were in a bad shape. This economy is in the ICU. So you got to get it back.
Let me ask you this. If you follow this line of reasoning and you are... imposing all of these taxes, you have not yet seen the growth that is required. Isn't that going to limit the capacity of the economy to come out of the slump?
No, it's not.
To explain why.
Then Miss Motley's first mini budget, right? She said growth will come in 36 months. Today is only, this is only 21 months now. Growth will come. You cannot get growth overnight.
Do you accept that there has long been the theory that if you want, one of the ways of helping to generate growth in an economy such as this is to stimulate spending in the economy. that if you go in the opposite direction and you sap up and grab all of that capacity, then it also limits your ability to stimulate the economy.
You know, Bob doesn't have the money. You know,
but you're not answering my question.
I answered your question by telling you you don't have the money to do the stimulus. No, Barbados, as you earlier said.
No, let's accept that you didn't have the money to do a big stimulus program. What the government has said is that it has put money, it has started to pay people.
Yes,
and,
it did.
And by paying people,
yes, it did.
That has helped to create a little bit of stimulus. But on the other side of the coin, the heavy taxation which people are crying about says, you are taking that money from me and therefore I can't spend it.
No,
so that which could have been used to help stimulate the economy is unavailable.
No, that's not so, right?
All right, talk to me.
No, as I said, right? No, when... You first thing, if you, like people that say the OIDC, people with the BIDC, people that think that will get sent home, people that the government refuse to pay the returns to and things like that. Obviously, right, they were going to clear the bills with that. Not necessarily that you're going to go and do extra spending and that type of a thing. But as I said, you got to understand, I heard you said this earlier, and you were correct. When the government talking about, look, you know, the government, they had no money in hand. They left at 2017, they have $410 million. But the upcoming foreign payments were about $286 million. They would have left them with $123 million in their hand. And they're supposed to be paying for it. They had $0, really.
Are you satisfied that the spokesman for the government have answered the question as to why the surplus has to be that high?
I understand why it has to be that high. But people, you see...
Are you satisfied that they have answered that question?
Yes, I am.
What did they tell you?
But I'm talking about there. I said something to you, and that makes a whole lot of sense, right? You cannot... And you mentioned Arthur, and as you say, you got to look at you got to put it into context. We're looking at both economies at the point in time, right?
Okay.
Arthur had built up his economy at that stage, and Arthur had, when he left office, he left $1.4 billion in foreign reserves. This country basically zero. They just left $110 million. But when you want to pay all you owe, you basically zero. They were heading to a devaluation. They were still heading to a devaluation. So that's why the Prime Minister had to do the selective default. Selective default, I heard the former Prime Minister saying, that's worse than the downgrade. Of course, then again, another example, he doesn't know what he's saying. Now, the downgrades, you would be cut from borrowing. For the last administration could not borrow on the local nor the foreign markets because of the state of the downgrades, right? Now, look, here it is now. You're going to get selective default. And look, Barbados come out smelling like a rose. So that can't be as bad as downgrades that they had. We reschedule our debt. And as I said, Barbados got must be about the best restructuring deal that is around. So that can't be the said thing. But if you owe the bank and you are struggling a little bit, you go into the people and you tell them, I really can't meet my commitments. The bank will work out something with you or the credit union, and you're good to go as opposed to not dealing with them and you just default. That's what the last government did. They had so much debt around them. They were just paying debt interest. So all the money, so you got your economy has to have extra cash. And or that's where you get your capital works program thing going. Right? That's basically it.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Good morning, David. How you doing?
I'm well. And you?
I'm good. I want to talk about a few things. essentially getting talking about what happened yesterday on Brass Tax, conversation with the Democratic Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to start it this way. The last time you and I had a conversation, I had said you were having a conversation with Mr. Murray. And subsequent to that, he called in. And he said that he spoke about the fact that he didn't appreciate the way in which I characterized him. Okay? Now, when it comes to this program, I don't speak about people, about personalities. I don't speak about people in their private lives. I speak about people as a public figure. Okay? And I spoke about, to him, with respect to his public, the capacity which he always comes and reminds the public of our business.
I really don't think it is useful for me to pick up from where you left off on Mr. Murray. I don't think so.
No. The reason I'm dealing with this is because what I was trying to get across was that what we have that has plagued this country has been by politicians avoiding responsibility. And this here is what I was bringing to try to show what happened yesterday, or what I heard yesterday coming from the representatives of the Democratic Labour Party. The continual avoiding of responsibility and accountability for what happened under their watch.
But you heard what Steve Blackett said. For instance, if they apologize, they will have to continue apologizing because there are people who are not going to accept it.
Just when some person is... People, isn't just about the words that you use to say something in terms of apologizing to somebody. It is sincerity with which you also are making that apology. And then the expectation of what happens after you have made an apology. So therefore, if you come to the public with the idea that, I can say, blame me, and let's get on with it, and that's it, then that is not what it is about. You have not shown the public of Barbados that you are sincere in your apology.
But chances are... Chances are the people that we are expecting to apologize may have a difficulty understanding what it is we want them to apologize for. When people say make an apology, what specifically are we asking for? For different people, it's different things. And therefore, the person on the other side of the fence has that difficulty in being able to grasp exactly which of the issues they must address.
But you see, David, this is where I'm trying to get across to you. I'm not talking about a person in their individual or private capacity.
Agreed.
In short, an individual who says, look, I don't want to apologize to none, that's their business. We're not dealing with that. We were dealing with a party and what the party has not done.
Okay, what should the party apologize for?
But hold on. Bear with me with my train of thought. I know sometimes I talk long.
You often talk long.
But bear
not
with
sometimes.
Me to where I'm trying to get to.
But you got to help me because I would like to guide you there quickly.
Because yesterday, what I heard from the senior members of that party was the question, they don't have anything to apologize for. What I heard from the junior members of their party was the acceptance that there was something to apologize for. Okay? So now I'm in a situation where I'm saying, did this group of people come to represent the party? Because if they did come to represent the party, then it is the party position that they would have expected.
I think that you need to
put forward.
You need to read.
But just a second.
You need to read between the lines. Clearly.
No, I'm not reading between lines, David. I'm reading what was done.
Well, come on. You're not the only person with a view on the thing. Clearly, what happened yesterday was that you saw that there are essentially two factions within the Democratic Labour Party, the old guard and the new guard. Didn't you see that?
Yeah, but that's what I just told you, in that respect. But I know I'm saying that when they came to the program yesterday, were they coming under the direction of the party, of the powers within, of the power of? Okay, let me put it this way. Do you realize that in the entire conversation they had yesterday, not once was the name of the current leader of the party brought up? Do you recognize that it was almost like they referred to the leader of the Democratic Labour Party as Fernando Stewart? Do you realize that only when Maxine McKinley came on the program, and even when she came on, and to remind people, well, we have a leader of the party, she didn't even mention the name of the leader still? So I'm saying to myself, okay, you're presenting an image to the Barbados people of a party that is on the, being rebuilding, rebranding, and under new direction. And yet you have not, that there has been no indication that the person who is supposed to be leading your party, shaping the vision of your party, bringing the vision, bringing this party to Barbados, to speak to Barbados about your new party, is there, is represented?
I really don't know.
So these are the sort of things that I got from that yesterday.
Well, I'm glad that you've gotten one set of, one message or more than one message. And
you disagree that that's not the message.
I'm sure that there are other people who will get theirs. I think that...
I'm asking for yours.
In my assessment...
What impression do you get?
In my assessment...
Yes, what I said, do you see the things which I have said just now?
I'm trying to answer the question, you know.
Okay.
Right? My assessment is that the Democratic Labour Party remains in some degree of trouble in terms of how it is going to move forward. I think that there are people who served the Democratic Labour Party in the last administration who are apparently sensing that this is now enough time for them to resurface. In the period that they have been dormant, some younger people and other people also see an opportunity to come forward under new leadership. There is every possibility that there is going to be a tussle going on within the party between what might now be seen as the old guard and the new guard. And I think what happened yesterday manifests that reality, that that's a distinct possibility that can emerge for the party. This is not peculiar, it is not unexpected, and the real test for the Democratic Labour Party and its leadership will be the ability to surmount those specific difficulties.
Okay, but no, you see, David, now this is where I'm also going, because I wasn't just talking about the Democratic Labour Party, and this is why I have spoken about the actions of the statements of Glenn Murray and stuff like that, because I'm talking about the actions of politicians throughout the history of this country, whether they be B or D.
Well, if you have been following politics long enough, you would have learned significant lessons. And one of the most significant lessons is that ultimately, most politicians behave the same way.
And
whether
we
they are B
it.
Or D. Whether we accept
it. We accept it.
Man, listen, stop being ridiculous. It is not a question of we accepting it, but it's the nature of politics and politicians.
No, I'm not interested in nature of politics.
Well, you go and find some way of resisting it then.
But this is the point. But I heard you speak.
Resist it
you
on your
earlier.
Own.
You're talking about water. We're speaking about water.
Mm-hmm.
And we're speaking about the issues that people are having with their water in their districts or what have you. And then the challenges that they're having going to the water authority, and they're supposed to go to the water authority to find out what's going on. And I'm saying to myself, hold on. You have a representative for your district that you voted into parliament. It is his job. It is his job to represent you. he should be the person. You should be able to go to his office and say, listen, I have a problem in this area. Mm-hmm. Can you help me? And he should then be able to find out, A, what the problem is, and communicate to you what the problem is.
It's one avenue.
And also communicate to you a timeline where that problem could be solved.
It is one of the avenues. It's not the only avenue, though. Thank you very much. We got to go. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, morning.
I would like to make a contribution to the subject in relation to caring for the elderly in nursing homes. It's a subject that got started earlier. Now, let me just say, I am a general trained nurse, and I would say that I have been given the honor of managing two nursing homes. And I would say that because of our aging population, even though persons are aging, many of those persons who come into the homes often have chronic conditions that have to be monitored and cared for. Caregivers, in my estimation, quite often are not aware of what is truly, fully involved in caring for an elderly person. And as a result, they may run into some difficulty. And sometimes what happens is, because of the stress of caring for an elderly person, they end up dying and leaving the person still around. I cannot speak for every nursing home in the island, but I can say from where I sit, I am passionate about caring, period. But my experience today, just over a year and some, has been one that has been overwhelming. And I just want to give a little brief idea as to what people pay for when they come into a home. You have 24-hour nursing care. You have planned cooked meals based on the medical and specific need of the resident and their likes and dislikes. You have RX medication, which has to be collected and given to them. You have to look at stimulation time, whether it's interactive, mentally, or physically. Then there are doctor's visits that are fixed, are planned, and the nurse in charge, like myself, is the one who will make sure those visits are met as planned. Then there is monitoring of the vital statistics of the residents in the home, because their hair doesn't mean that we, as a matter of fact, we have to pay specific attention to their vital stats, blood pressure, temperature, pulse, respiration. And if the person is diabetic, it's done an even more frequent basis. Mm-hmm. And all of these.
And then there's profit too.
Pardon?
And then there's profit too.
Yes, but what I want, well, let me go, since you have moved me away from all that they pay for, because persons don't always recognize what they pay for. I'm going to get to the subject of profit in a minute, if you would allow me. Bathroom visits, showering time, then if the person is dependent, totally dependent, and you have to look at pressure area care,
Let's cut to the chase and ask this question.
All right,
question.
Let me get on to profit.
If
a person is paying $2,000 a month for care, that works so at $66 a day. Now, if you look at all of the things that are offered in relation to caring for that person, I don't know if you think that $66 a day is.
No, but that's why I said I wanted to move to the bigger issue, which is this. The people who run nursing homes have their costs, and they have to look at the margin of profit that they need to get to remain viable and to pay shareholders, because it's a business. The question is, against the backdrop of the increase in the elderly population, the difficulties that so many people face in trying to get the money that is required for care, how does Barbados tackle this problem towards the future? What is it that we can put in place? We've already got some private insurance, but even they may well be balking at the whole idea of the costs associated with it. So how do we fix it? Does this come under the rubric of the planned National Health Scheme similar to what we have right now for the NIS, under the NIS in other areas?
Well, I don't know if the government will be able to afford that, because a lot of the NIS payments are made based on the salary persons would have made while they were working. And quite often, when people retire, they sometimes retire on $1,600 a month, $1,800 a month. I'm looking at high-end persons retiring. Some are fortunate to retire on a little more than that. But quite often, many of the elderly persons are retiring on much less than that. So I do not know if the government would see that as a measure that they want to implement to assist persons. Maybe if there is a special fund that can be opened for persons who cannot meet the criteria for going into a home in terms of cost, then they may need to look at setting up a system specifically for that, so that, yes, you get your pension, but then if you require additional assistance, then the government may want to step in and assist.
It's a national crisis. So that's one part of it. One part of it has to do with how you are going to provide the care at both public and private level, because we had a lot of discussion this morning about the private aspect. But then the government itself is bearing costs for places like what we call the geriatric hospital and stuff
Correct.
Like that. And then the other dimension to this is those people who keep their relatives at home and try to care for them. We've had home help assisting with that. But because
that's
of...
That's not adequate.
Right. And because of the size of our population. I mean, I saw a home health worker the other day complaining bitterly about the conditions under which she is had to work. Remember, they go from one home to the next. And the conditions will vary from home to home and person to person.
I agree.
And she spoke about having to go into this home where the lady kept dogs in the house, and the dogs messed up all over the place. And she was just shaken up by all of this. So this is a huge national problem that you know, we talk about it occasionally. But again, we do not really come to it in a holistic way, in a way that says, look, these are the different elements of the problem, and this is what we are doing. We've got this group of people looking at that, and this other group looking at it. Maybe it's happening, but we just don't discuss it in those terms, you know?
Well, I am supporting what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
But I can only, well, I didn't get the opportunity to work at the geriatric hospital myself, so I can tell you firsthand what the experience was like there. And if I may say, there were many shortages on many occasions. Some days you didn't have gloves. Some days we didn't have enough soap to go around. Because often what happens at the geriatric hospital, and that was my experience, many of our people would take their relatives there, and then they don't come back, don't look back. Then all they need to do is visit once a week, bring some soap, bring some toilet tissue, assist the government in the whole process of taking care of the elderly. But that, I found, was one of the issues there. They just dumped them in the home and left them. And government has to do all of the caring in terms of cost. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But it might need a whole change in our mindset when it comes to caring for elderly people. Because I think too often people forget that those are the ones who would have led the way for us, them, to be where they are today. I don't know how you can change that.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. I think we have Yvette Harris on the line. And
good morning.
Good morning, Yvette. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm well. I wanted a gentleman called earlier. Well,
yes.
Two people called about water problems. There was a woman who said, I can't remember exactly where she lives. But
in Bank Hall.
Pardon?
In Bank Hall.
Okay. She was having discolored water, and she says that when she goes to the neighbor's water is okay, but her water remains discolored. And, you know, what can be done in those circumstances? Can you answer her concern?
That lady and her concern, I think, has already been brought to the authorities' attention. because I know our water quality specialist would have visited, I believe, that same lady. What it sounds like her challenge is she's at the end of a line, and she is basically getting sedimentation in the water that's causing the discoloration. She did indicate that there were occasions where we would have flushed and the problem would have, the situation would have gone away. That is something that I know is still receiving our attention. If it is a case in point where the section of main that leads to her may need to be changed, if it is an area location, we may do the change for a longer time. Section into the development.
It's taking time, and question which I had was, if her neighbor is getting a better feed, why is it that she is not linked to that feed instead? But she says, you know, if she is going to have to live like this, so many people are saying this. I mean, why should we be paying the same thing for the water when the water is so nasty, messing up clothes, I can't cook with it? Shouldn't I get a rebate? Shouldn't I get something off of this? I mean, that's a policy decision. That's not yours.
Yes, David, it is. But in the interim, the authority will continue at least to assist by flushing of the main in her area and consistent monitoring of the neighborhood.
No,
in terms of that.
The other one had to do with this man who's looking after his mother at Jericho in St. George.
What's
going on there?
Now, Jericho would be one of the St. George areas where our shutoff will be impacting those residents. Now, the Water Authority would have commenced nightly shutoff last year in 2019, and that was to reduce the service disruptions and the outages that were being experienced in the St. Joseph areas. Now, due to the extended dry period that we find ourselves in, those shutoffs continue. They are nightly shutoffs between 9 p.m. and 4 a.m., but what we had to do and we would have informed the public of is on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we also did, we extended the shutoff hours to include daytime. We shut on those 3 days between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., and I believe that's what the gentleman was speaking to.
Yeah.
On those days of the week. So it is a reminder to residents in areas in St. George. There are some St. Thomas areas and some St. John areas where in order to keep the levels going into our Golden Ridge Reservoir, we have to shut off periodically.
What's the best that could be done for people like that? The water tanker?
We do provide water tanker service to assist them. But in addition to that, because we do keep the hours of the shutoff fairly consistent, if it is possible that when the water comes back on, they can top back up their storage to assist them in the hours that it will be off. That would also help. Because the areas include, as I said, several St. George locations, and Jericho is one of the districts. There's some in St. Thomas, some in St. George.
And the problem, the underlying problem with Golden Ridge?
Yes, they're trying to get the levels in Golden Ridge, keep them fairly consistent so that we can supply all the customers.
Because that's affected by the drought?
Yes, it is. This prolonged dry period is forcing us to have to shut off the certain periods so as to boost levels in the reservoir to be able to push back out again.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Yvette Harris, the Barbados Water Authority.
David. David?
Yeah.
I also wanted at this time just to introduce something that I would have shared with BrassTech earlier, and I have with me Director of Engineering Charles Leslie, because we have an issue at our Bell pumping station this morning with a power outage. So I will ask Mr. Leslie to speak to that, if I may.
Let's hear him, yeah.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis. Good
morning.
Yes, as Eva indicated, we had a power outage this morning at the Bell pumping station. Since then, the Barbados Light and Power has been at the Bell working with our electricians trying to get the station back online on their power. What we have done in the interim is that we are in the process of connecting a standby generator there because they're still trying to troubleshoot to see why we would have had that power failure at the Bell. The Bell normally has two supplies on the ground and the overhead. and both of them were affected. So we have gone to the standby generator now to assist in keeping the pump online.
So what's the effect of this? How widespread is this?
Okay, the bell feeds a very large area. Bell water goes as high up as Carter's Gap in Christchurch. It feeds obviously Bridgetown and as high as like St. David's and some of those areas. Bell contributes to about between 25 to 30,000 people daily. So it's a fairly large area. But the standby generator will be able to buy us time until our guys and the light and power guys can figure out exactly what is causing this problem at the Gulf.
So as it stands right now, water has not gone off in these areas, or has it?
Water went off because the fault was from the supply of power coming into the facility. So water did go off, and both Barbados Water Authority as well as BLMP technicians were deployed to find out exactly what is happening. So they're still troubleshooting to see what's happening there.
But how long?
They're using standby generators.
How long would these areas have been affected by the water outage?
Those areas would have been affected from like around 7:30 this morning until probably like 11 or so. But remember, those areas obviously have, they would not have felt it right away because you have water coming back from the reservoirs that would have fed into the system to make up a little of the deficit. But I believe, some of the customers in that white area will begin to feel the effects of it now.
Okay, that's the critical point, that if you're starting to feel the effects of it, then what?
Yes.
What do you do in these circumstances, recognizing that you are on standby generator?
Yes, the standby generator, we will start the pumps back up on that, but it will take a while before the reservoirs fully replenish. And we have water tankers in the area as well, feeding some of the critical customers.
Okay, thank you very much. That's Charles Leslie?
Yes, sir.
From the Barbados Water Authority, updating us on the problems that they have had today at the Bell. Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, I want to say just a little word on the water situation. I've lived in Antigua. I've lived in Anguilla. I've lived in St. Eustatius. All of those islands carry cisterns. If you don't have a cistern, you're just not going to have water. With this prolonged drought, I have not heard a word from the water folk that this is an alternative that perhaps we should be using. The houses built in Barbados for the last 25, 30 years all had to have cisterns. But it is not, it's not in force. It's not part of our system. And if this drought continues, we're really going to be in a sad state.
Instead, what we end up doing is periodically people get on the radio or complain bitterly about the fact that they're paying for water and they can't get it.
Because there is no
comprehensive approach to the water problem that we would have anticipated, especially since 2017. It's still not there.
Yes. Somebody has to take the bull by the horn and decide, well, look, we will have to, or in Anguilla, I've had an underground cistern and also an above the surface cistern. I think in Antigua, about the same thing as well. It is a situation that we have to look at. We've had a good shower of rain here yesterday, well, over the last few days, and all has gone to the ground. And yet people will call in and say, we ain't got no water. This is 3 days we ain't got no water. This is 3 weeks we ain't got no water. And the water's gone to the ground. The water has gone to the ground, wasted. well, in large measure. And unless we get smart and use our cisterns or use our tanks, and to purify the water, just take a little chlorine. That's all. That's all. It's rainwater that is running through the pipe. Came from the rain. It hasn't come from Mars. And somehow somebody has got to get bold and say, no, we've got to do better than that.